Chapter 1. Jumping Off the Hamster Wheel. December 2011. It was one of the worst days of my life. The rain was falling hard. The night was pitch black. I was utterly devastated. You've had those moments too, haven't you? Everything was crumbling around me. You're not a good teacher. Those words were on a replay loop in my mind. Those words rocked my world. The darkness and gloom around me were nothing compared to what I was feeling inside. If I'm not a good teacher, then why am I doing this? Striving for the approval of others that never comes, feeling like I let others down, believing nothing I do is ever good enough. "You're not a good teacher," went directly to, "You're a failure," in my heart and in my mind. This is not the first time I'd felt that way. My mind drifted to all the other times in my life when I was told that I was not meeting expectations. I vividly remember the first time I heard that was one afternoon in sixth grade. 12-year-old me bounded into my bedroom after school with my normal zeal, ready to tackle my homework. I was met by a goldenrod yellow piece of paper on my bed. I'm not sure I've ever cared for that shade of yellow ever since. I could easily read the title there in black and white, "Minimum Expectations for Lisa K. Woodruff." My preteen enthusiasm dissolved in an instant. What followed was a typed list of 30 daily expectations my mother had set out for me in single-spaced text. I got to number 5 and stopped reading. I was devastated. I could never in my life achieve this list even once, let alone every single day. My preteen self could not reconcile an impossible list with my desire to be good and please my parents. I knew I was physically incapable of the standard of perfection set before me. Have you ever been there before? Feeling like you're letting down the people you love and care about over and over again? This was my first time, but it certainly was not the last. To this day, my mother regrets writing that list. We all make mistakes, and I've long since forgiven her. But the truth is, I can still feel that sinking feeling. I confess that I, too, have wanted to give my own children a similar list over the years. Just like my mom, I get frustrated when I think about what I believe my kids could and should do. My expectations of them are also unmet sometimes. What parent doesn't hold their kids up to some far-fetched and nearly impossible standards? The pain of that day has faded over the years, but the lesson has remained. At the age of 12, I learned that I could not be perfect. And that has been truly freeing. Yes, freeing. I'll let you in on a little secret. You can't be perfect either. I know that when you read all my blog posts and listen to my podcasts, you think that I'm different somehow, that I couldn't get in as big of a mess as you have, whether physically or emotionally. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm going to share my journey with you, and maybe you'll catch a glimpse of yourself along the way. Remember how I said my world was crumbling? Let's start there. I want to tell you where I started and how bad it really was. We can all learn the skills of organization, but we need to start exactly where we are, not where we think we should be on this journey. Despite being a professional organizer, my own house has never been perfectly clean nor perfectly organized. Unless you count the week we were waiting to adopt our daughter, Abby, That's the only time I can remember our house not having a single to-do left undone. I know that I'm not perfect, but I had always thrown myself into my job as a classroom teacher. That was the one area of my life that I knew I excelled. And so the words that night from my administrator sent me into a tailspin. I was not prepared for what came next. After a long day of work and a nonsensical meeting, I just wanted to go home. What I got instead was what felt like a personal attack. My administrator called me in and delivered this heart-wrenching message. You're not a good teacher. Define good. Teaching middle school math in a Montessori environment meant having 24 different individualized lesson plans. Every night, I stayed up until midnight preparing lessons for the next school day. Every day, I was awake by 5 a.m. in order to get my own kids off to the bus stop and myself to school on time. If that wasn't good enough, what was a good teacher anyway? And who gets to decide the standard for good? This time, though, I knew my administrator was wrong. I might not have a clean house or perfectly well-behaved children at home, but I was giving 110% to my job. I knew that I was a good teacher. This administrator's assessment of my performance and the resulting feedback about me were both wrong. I finally got it. Being 39 years old definitely contributed to this situation. I was so tired. I thought I was the only one who felt this way, overburdened with my never-ending to-do list and the mental load of trying to fill the roles of wife, mother, and teacher, just to name the top three. In the past, when I was overwhelmed and tired, I could block off a weekend and get my ducks in a row and be ready to jump back in the hamster wheel on Monday morning. But now, I just felt like a depleted, tired, discouraged hamster. So many dramatic thoughts and big emotions swirled inside of me. I felt fear at never ever meeting anyone's expectations or never receiving the recognition I craved. I felt anger at once again putting everything else, including my job, above the needs of my husband and kids. Meeting my own needs didn't even figure into the mix. I was too worn out. That was probably the strongest emotion that captured my attention. I was already 39 and realized I had no plan for the rest of my life. All I could see was the same cycle and the same burnout on repeat with no end in sight. This season as a teacher was supposed to be a step up for my family, but I was definitely not reaping the benefits that my husband Greg and I had anticipated. In previous years, I was a stay-at-home mom. It was all I ever wanted to be. But the last 7 years had been a slow and brutal slide into this present chaos. How did I get here? How could I get out? Let's rewind a bit more. I didn't get to this point overnight. About 2 years earlier, when I was 37, Greg and I were facing the largest consumer debt we had ever accumulated. I often made jokes that it was a good thing Greg and I were old. That is the one benefit of being a Gen Xer. We have credit from years of working. That's not actually money, mind you, just credit. All our lives, we had used credit to our advantage. The first time we took out a second mortgage on the house was when we adopted our son, Joey. We paid off that adoption in 14 months and then started the process again. We were blessed with the adoption of our daughter, Abby, after only 2 more months. There's absolutely nothing we would change about that part of our story. We were so happy. Fast forward to 2009, though, and we were overextended. There was nothing to do but work more, and that meant I had to go back to teaching. I took this full-time teaching job when we were out of money and our credit was maxed out. Unfortunately, our debts kept mounting. Our financial obligations and bills were growing month after month. The answer was obvious. Working full-time as a teacher was only slowing our debt accumulation, not actually reversing it. It took 18 months for us to realize this, partly because we were in survival mode, and partly because it was our first time facing these life lessons. 2 months prior to my return to full-time teaching, we ended up begging the private school to readmit Joey mid-year, as the public school placement was not serving his unique needs. After 3 years of an amazing private education environment that was perfectly designed for Joey's learning style and disabilities, we reluctantly chose not to renew his enrollment only because of the $20,000 tuition bill. There's nothing that feels worse than not being able to provide what you know your child needs. So we kept pushing. With both of us working full-time and neither of us being able to see the real damage unfolding before us. Isn't that what happens? You push so hard, and it takes a crisis to change your course. I knew I was working beyond my capacity, but I'd always been able to just keep going. Riding the roller coaster of the economy, the bankruptcy of the direct sales company I represented, my parents' separation and divorce, and my father's illness and then death were becoming too much to handle. I wanted off the hamster wheel. What could we do to make this stop? I had always juggled too much. Changing that broken system felt so foreign, but it had to happen. Back to that hurtful day in December 2011. Being told that I basically was a failure by someone whose opinion about my performance was supposed to matter. Remember the rain? Remember the darkness? Conditions were as bad as they could be, but yet perfect for what had to happen next. As I drove home from that ill-fated meeting and away from those despised words from my administrator, I kept running the numbers in my head and coming to the same conclusion. There wasn't enough money, no matter what I did. Failure? I did not accept failure. I didn't then, and I don't now. There is always another way. I had been focusing all of my energy on being the best teacher I could. That night, I was told my best was not good enough. Those words will put a hard pause in the middle of anyone's week, but they were life-changing for me. I woke up during that drive home to a difficult realization. All of my waking hours were devoted to a job that was not earning as much as we needed. I felt like I was failing on all fronts. I was a failure. 5 years of trying harder, sleeping less, and putting everyone else first had failed. My 40th birthday was just around the corner, and I could not accept this was my lot in life. When I was a child, I had two dreams. One dream was to be a wife and mother. The second dream was to own my own business and be an entrepreneur, just like my mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, father, and grandfather. It was in my genes and in my blood. I could accept my failure as a teacher, but I would never forgive myself if I failed my family. I knew that only I could be the wife to Greg and the mother to Joey and Abby. They were, and always will be, my first and most important priority. When I remembered my second dream, I started to realize that I did have a way out. I came from a long line of hardworking people who just made it happen, whatever business they were in, because they had to. I had to make it happen, too. This was my time to join the family legacy of doing whatever it takes. I had dabbled in a few side hustles in the past, but this was different. I knew it was time to get off the hamster wheel. It was my time to quit my job, come home, and start my own business. At first, I had no idea what that business would be, but I knew I could do something, anything was better than the path I was on now. I pulled in the driveway, walked in the door, and told my husband I was going to quit my teaching job. That's just how I am. No nonsense. Direct. Matter of fact. Fine, he said, keeping his eyes glued to the game on TV. No questions, no comment besides, fine. I really am, I called back as I turned to go upstairs. Okay, he acknowledged, as though I'd just told him it was time for dinner. Maybe the clouds and darkness from my drive had clung to me, and he didn't want to know more until after I'd settled. Or maybe he knew the signs of when I had made a decision and knew to stay out of my way. We're a great team that way. I started up the stairs. I stopped at each of the kids' bedrooms, checking to see if they had what they needed to get their work done before school tomorrow. Being the last day of the school year before winter break, no homework was due, and the kids were in a favorable mood. I got settled on my bed, opened my laptop, and started to write. An hour later, I had finished my resignation letter, and I walked back downstairs to have my husband read it. I stood there as he read, making sure he really did know the full extent of what I was doing. Throughout our 25 years of marriage, Greg has never told me no or stopped me from anything I felt convicted to do. But this was big. Huge. I was giving up a consistent paycheck for what? I didn't know what my next step was at the time. I knew this was the answer, but I couldn't see how the math was going to work. It didn't work with what I was currently doing, but I couldn't really see a clear path forward either. I just knew that changing my course was the only option. Do it, Greg said, snapping me out of my thoughts. Are you sure? I replied, suddenly a little less certain of those passionate convictions of only a few moments before. Yes, he said, handing me the letter and turning his attention back to the TV. The decision was made. We were in this together, whatever this was. We would step off the hamster wheel and face the future together. The next morning was the Friday before winter break. I arrived at school early, slipped my resignation letter under my administrator's locked door, and made my way to my classroom to let my co-teacher know I was done teaching. I was finished teaching in that classroom, and at that school, I had yet to find my classroom, the classroom where I was uniquely created to teach, the classroom where I could share the most compelling lessons I'd ever have the privilege to teach.